Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield. I'm podcasting from Paleo FX today. The episode that you're about to hear is with a guy I've had the opportunity to hang out with a few times at Paleo FX, Mike Bledsoe. You're going to learn a lot more about Mike in today's episode, everything from how he got started into CrossFit to his journey into plant-based medicine and far beyond. I really dig this dude, and I think you will too. But first, just a few quick announcements. This podcast is brought to you by High Altitude Premium Coffee infused with nootropics, Chimera Coffee. Now, I haven't talked that much about how this stuff is grown. I've talked about what it has in it that spins the dials in your brain, everything from alpha GPC to taurine to L-theanine to DMAE. But this stuff is actually grown at 5,000 feet altitude. They source their beans from a single estate coffee plantation that's been run by the same family for over 40 years. They actually have a farming practice where this coffee is grown, in which they plant a really wide diversity of trees, and that prevents things like soil erosion. It also helps to maintain the perfect pH balance and soil nutrition when they grow the coffee. So you can check this stuff out at chimeracoffee.com. That's K-I-M-E-R-A-K-O-F-F-E-E.com. And when you go there, you can use discount code BEN. This podcast is also brought to you by something else that I've had a chance to try here at Paleo FX, something designed by an award-winning 3 Michelin-starred chef, the former head of R&D at the Fat Duck that was ranked the number one restaurant in the world. Well, this guy kind of designed something slightly unique. It's a protein bar. It's a protein bar made with cricket. You may have seen it in Men's Health. You may have seen it in New York Times. Basically, what he's done is actually figured out a way to take sustainable protein from crickets and put it into a pretty dang tasty bar. The flavor that I'm going to recommend you try today is banana bread. It's probably my favorite, right up there with peanut butter and jelly. You can try any of their flavors, though, their sweet stuff or their savory stuff. You go to exoprotein.com/Ben. That's exoprotein.com/Ben. And when you order, you can get a sampler pack from them with all their most popular flavors for less than $10. And that includes free shipping. That's about a 33% discount. So check them out, exoprotein.com/Ben. And then finally, this podcast is brought to you by Fit Life Green Juice. A lot of green juices that are out there, they get heat oxidized. By the time they get to you, they've actually got more damage in them that will do damage to your body than they have goodness in them. This stuff, though, is gently dried. It's a superfood mix that has things like coconut and ashwagandha in it. And it means that you can get your green juice without blending, without chopping, without making a big mess in your kitchen. Super easy. You can put it in a Ziploc bag, travel with it, toss into anything you want. Tastes fantastic. Coconut, ashwagandha, turmeric, you name it. And you get a discount on this stuff. Just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/fitlife. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/fitlife. And you're automatically going to get a 20% discount off anything from Organifi FitLife. Check it out. And now on to today's episode, starting right out on the porch in front of Paleo FX in Austin, Texas, with the great Mike Bledsoe. Enjoy. In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
If it's something that I don't like that's happened to me, it didn't happen to me. I did it myself. The good things that happen, I made those things happen. Everything that is going on around me, I have some control over.
Through these experiences, I care less about my own personal gain. And what I find is when I serve people more, more goodness comes into my life in ways that I could have never imagined it. Like, my life is a dream. And the more that I am looking out for others, the more really good stuff just happens to fall in my lap.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Talking about explosive diarrhea and baking soda.
That's usually where you want to start.
That's a perfect place to start a podcast. No, like, but there is good research behind baking soda.
It works.
Yeah, and decreasing lactic acid.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you have to, from my experimentation with it, teeny tiny doses over 2 hours, leading up to whenever you want to blast off.
Gotcha.
Unless you literally want to blast out your backside. A whole bunch all at once.
Yeah, there's always a trade-off.
Yeah.
Seems.
So, Mike Bledsoe, how did you first become interested in baking soda?
It was brought to my attention. Actually, I was attending the University of Memphis. I was in the kinesiology department. And, I was constantly signing up to be a lab rat for all the studies being done, which is a great way to learn science.
Huh? You get paid for that?
Hell yeah.
When you're in college?
Yeah, I was getting paid
college,
like...
college students listening in?
Yeah, like $50 or $100 a pop.
It's a lot of money in college.
I mean, I used to like... I've got like 9 scars in my vastus lateralis from muscle biopsies, which I think I made less than $1,000 total for donating my muscle.
Muscle biopsies hurt.
Yeah, they're not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still have scars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Worst biopsy ever. I went up to Ball State. Up in Indiana, and they were doing a study, and they had done a lot of they were doing tendon biopsies. They were taking a patellar tendon biopsy, and they had been taking them from cyclists, endurance athletes, and they were like, "Oh yeah, 2 weeks later you're fine."
Right.
However, we've been getting a lot of endurance guys. We need to get some weightlifters in here. So my background's in Olympic weightlifting, and we need to get some guys who are, you know, they squat heavy loads. So we understand that things might be a little bit different for y'all.
Yeah.
So we want to get your tendons. We're like 2 weeks, right on. And we happened to
right. two week recovery period.
2 week recovery.
Doable.
And my friend Dr. Andy Galpin, he was looking to go to school there, so he was up there visiting the school. And Doug, Andy, and I all decided to give tendon biopsy samples. 2 years, because
2 years to recover from giving a biopsy.
Yeah. So. And they actually, after that, they stopped doing them for that reason. And, you know, again, they were working with cyclists. And it, not only was I a weightlifter, so it didn't bother me when I was weightlifting. It was when I was doing jiu-jitsu. And I'd be wrestling, and I would drop my knee to the mat.
Right.
And I would drop that patellar tendon. I'd put all my weight on my patellar tendon in a very dynamic fashion. And shooting pain, like a tear coming out the side of my eye type of.
For that long, for like years after the biopsy.
Yeah, and Doug experienced the same thing.
Wow.
You know, and it's still not a big deal. It's like I just wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, still though, $50. I mean, for a couple of years, that's
hell
not
yeah.
bad.
Not bad at all.
My my biopsy experience, my one biopsy experience was I did the, have you heard of Jeff Volek's FASTER study?
No.
Where he took a bunch of athletes and had half of them follow a strict ketogenic 90% plus fat-based diet for a year. And
whoa.
Then another group did just a regular.
Were these college students?
Regular endurance. No, this was just athletes. Some of them may have been college students.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
But and I was one of the high fat guys. And so they took me in and they did a fat biopsy out of the right and left upper butt cheek, and then a muscle biopsy off of the hamstrings and the quads. But what they had you do right after the biopsy was run on a treadmill for 3 hours.
Whoa.
And it was pounding. And for those of you who are listening, if you haven't had a biopsy, basically it involves shoving a needle that's got like a mini guillotine in it into the muscle, and then shaving off part of the muscle, drawing it back out so you can look at things like how much glycogen is in the muscle tissue before or after exercise.
You can get a direct look at like fast twitch to slow twitch.
Yeah.
There's all you can get any
cool
data
protocol
that you want out of it.
Yeah,
really.
You can learn a lot, but yeah, it hurts a lot. So,
yeah, the one that I had shoved in my leg was about the size of a number 2 pencil.
Yeah,
it's got a little window in it.
Yeah, they're big.
So they
got to
like make an incision and then they put it in. And the thing about muscle biopsy, they go about an inch deep, is they can put lidocaine on the surface, but you really can't deaden anything happening in the muscle. A, there's not a lot of things going on in there. And then B, if you deaden that area, like, you're impacting the study.
Yeah.
So you got to like put like a number two pencil into your thigh, and then you got to like push it to the side so muscle slides into that window.
Yep.
And then it's called like a suck and chop, I think is what it's called, suck and chop.
Yeah.
So it's like somebody pulls a little bit, creates a little suction, pulls the muscle in, and chop. Yeah, it's got the guillotine, as you described it.
Suck and chop is such a horrible term. And they call like the knee procedure the lavage and debridement, which sounds very scientific. You're going to go get your knee cleaned out. Suck and chop. And they always tell you, right before the biopsy, because the two people that did my biopsy, both before and after, they always tell you right before, this is not going to hurt. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, it's lidocaine, we're going to numb it up, you're just going to feel a little pressure.
Science is full of liars.
And by pressure, they mean intense 9 out of 10 pain.
So, actually, my friend, I was his first subject.
Really?
Dr. Andy Galpin, the first time he was in the master's program, and he comes up to me in the lab, and I had already been a subject before, and he was like, hey, I got something I want to ask you. And as soon as he said that, I was like, yes, I'll do it. I'll be your first subject ever.
Yeah.
And it was funny because he had to go in a few times, then get it the first time. And then as he was digging in there, I was like, nope, you're going to have to push more this direction. No, not like that. I was like having to guide, because I had experienced it before. So I knew how it should feel. So I'm sitting there in excruciating pain and like helping him guide the procedures. It was kind of funny.
When I was a kid, my dad owned a non-emergency medical transport business. So he competed against the city to transport people to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
So he had a bunch of employees, EMTs, who worked for him. And I used to go hang out at the station, and I would get chased around at 10 years old for guys who wanted to practice sticking me for IVs. That was my childhood. So, yeah, people practicing medical procedures on you, unless you're getting paid at least $50. I'd say $50, Mike.
Yeah, at least $50. You know what? People wonder, like, how did you get to where you are? You know, you just got to, like, do a bunch of dumb shit along the way.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll learn
something. So I was a kid getting chased around by EMTs with needles. What about you? What was your childhood like?
Construction. My dad owned a remodeling and, like, a home... remodeling and home improvement business. Yeah, so my days in my childhood were re-roofing houses, replacing windows, hanging siding, tearing out walls, building new ones, yeah.
When I first met you, you were hanging out with a bunch of the guys from the Barbell Shrugged podcast.
Yes.
Doug, who you already mentioned, and who was the other guy?
Chris Moore.
Doug and Chris Moore.
Yeah.
And my impression of you when I first met you was that you were just a dyed-in-the-wool, tattooed CrossFitter, although I have to admit, I believe it was on this very porch where we are standing at Paleo FX. When I came across you, you were tucked away in the corner, I think with the Headspace app or some kind of meditation app or something like that.
Quite possibly, yeah.
So I knew you were wired a little bit differently
because
you were tapping into some of the woo-woo stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as the whole Barbell Shrugged podcast and the whole CrossFitter crowd, how did you get plugged into doing that podcast, and where did you go from construction, working with your dad, into doing stuff like CrossFit?
Yeah, it's actually a really long journey. I'll try to make it fairly short.
Yeah, because I'm sure you told a million times on other podcasts that people could go download. Just tell the cool stuff.
The cool stuff.
Yeah.
So throughout high school, I did a little bit of that. I ended up lifeguarding. I was actually a big swimmer. Like, I loved being in the water, and I decided I was going to go in the military. And I was like, well, I'll go in the Navy. I love the water.
Yeah.
I'll try to be a Navy SEAL, because those guys, they get paid to dive and blow things up. So,
mm-hmm.
I'll do that. Go in. Didn't quite make it through BUDS. Got hurt. And they were like, oh.
So you started to go through BUDS?
Oh, yeah. I went into Hell Week. I did 3 days of Hell Week. There was about a 24-hour period. I really jacked up my hip flexor. Poor running technique. I was 19 years old, didn't know any better. And, you're carrying around boats and logs.
Yeah.
And so my hip flexor just got just shot to pieces. And nothing was, like, permanently torn, but I couldn't keep up with the group. And they were like, all right, we're going to roll you back. And you're going to do it over again. Like, you're going to start over at the beginning. I was like, ding, I'm out.
The last thing you want to hear at BUDS is you got to start. So you were 3 days in.
3 days in the Hell Week, and they wanted me to start over phase one, which... I was like the fifth week into phase one. I was like,
at that point, what was the hardest thing you'd done?
You know, the thing that actually f***ed up the most, the thing that was running with weight. I just wasn't prepared to run with weight. The cold water didn't bother me.
You mean like rucking?
Yeah, like rucking, carrying a boat on my head, log in my arms. I was a good runner. I was a good swimmer. The cold water didn't bother me. The sleep deprivation I was cool with. I'm a person who, when I'm experiencing a lot of stress, I have a hard time eating. So two things were happening during Hell Week was I didn't get enough calories, and my running just broke down under the load. So I wasn't used to running with weight. In retrospect, it's obvious I should have trained for that more. But, that's how life does. Yeah. I spent time in the Navy. I did a lot of running, swimming, lifting. I tried to get back to buds. Never happened, because when you're in the military, you don't exactly get to make all the choices. I get out of the Navy, and I start going to University of Memphis. And I go, there's exercise science? Dope. I didn't even know that, you could do that. I love exercising.
Right.
I love being physical.
Right.
So I started studying that. I was super fortunate that...
And they didn't call it physical education.
No.
That's what attracted me to exercise science as well, because that's what I studied, was it wasn't called PE.
Right.
No, nobody wants a major in PE.
No.
Right.
No.
But exercise science makes you sound smart, at least.
Exactly. But I didn't even know what I was going to do with that. All I know is I like this, because I started off doing a business major, and I was like, I did an accounting class. I'm like, this is not for me.
Right.
I'm going to go. And I was like, exercise, I can do that. First class, weightlifting 101. And I'm like, I know weightlifting. I've been in the gym for like 9 years. Walk in, I get handed a PVC pipe, and the guy who ended up being my weightlifting coach was like, all right, we're going to do the snatch and the clean and jerk, starting with PVC. I was like, what is going on? An hour later, completely fall in love with the lifts, snatch and clean and jerk. I became a weightlifter. Started training with him all the time. He was actually research published on Olympic weightlifting in the United States. Dr. Brian Schilling worked under Dr. Andy Fry.
That was the name of this guy, Dr. Brian Schilling, who was teaching this weightlifting 101 class?
Yeah, I lucked out that he was teaching it, because that class could have been taught by somebody else and I would not have gotten the benefit. So I get into weightlifting, and then one of my Navy buddies comes like a year later and goes, hey, there's this CrossFit thing going on. So I go, that looks really dumb. He's like doing wall ball shots and box jumps for reps, and I'm going, I don't think that's right. Everything that I've learned.
Was this like early days of CrossFit? Like how long ago was this?
2006.
2006. So pretty early, right?
Yeah. Nobody in my town was doing it.
Not that I profess to know when CrossFit started, because I've done maybe 10 CrossFit workouts in my life.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
That's my level of knowledge of CrossFit.
So 6 months later, because I'm also doing MMA at the time, 6 months later, I'm like, you know what? I don't have any competitions coming up for weightlifting. I'm going to try this CrossFit thing out. I'm going to go do a workout. I'm going to go do Fran or something. I did it, and I was actually considering opening a gym at the time. And I did Fran, and then I did Diane. I did some of these names. I go, this is a lot of fun. I was like, if I'm going to open a gym, like, that's the kind of gym I want to run, and then teaching people how to move. I'd been a personal trainer at that point, and in a gym full of machines and some dumbbells. And
right. No PVC pipes.
Yeah, no PVC pipes, no bumper plates, right. No kettlebells. So I start really digging on this. Gymnastics rings, all this stuff is just blowing my mind. And I'm like, you know what? There's no CrossFit gym. I'm going to open one. And I don't think there was 150 gyms open when we opened our box. We were the first ones in Memphis. So I had a lot of CrossFit gyms open up, and they don't have that background. Their first introduction to fitness is CrossFit.
Right.
I had already had a really good education around just strength and conditioning. So when I found CrossFit, I had this advantage as an athlete and as a coach. And so we opened up the box and we got rolling, and we were doing really well. And my business partner now, Doug Larson, he joined me, and he's very complimentary to help me run the business. And we were producing good athletes, and then we started studying business, and we were running our gym really well. So I had a lot of people calling me in the region, how are you doing this, all this? And I was like, I found myself doing free consults, 2 or 3 hours a week, and I would really enjoyed it. And I loved giving advice, and I was coaching guys in a different way.
So you guys were making a lot of money with this CrossFit box.
We were making good money. Well. Yeah, we were
doing
well.
What is good money with a CrossFit box? I don't know, in that day, what would be considered?
I think
profitable.
Anything over $30,000 a month would be, that's fair amount of money.
Right.
With the typical model, which is all classes and stuff like that, not a lot of personal training going on.
Right. Is that gross revenue over the course of a month?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, there are some gyms now that are, they break $1 million a year. They're doing, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a month.
Right.
It's possible,
But there's overhead expenses with running a gym like that as well, right?
Not as much as a lot of other gyms, though.
Really?
I mean, the equipment's relatively cheap.
Yeah, it is pretty basic.
Yeah,
I mean ropes, kettlebells, bars.
I can spend $20,000, $30,000 and have all the equipment I need, whereas Some gym, you walk into a
Clubo
gym.
You don't have to hire
gym.
Someone to come in and fix the elliptical trainer every week?
Dude, you walk in, a good treadmill's $10,000.
Yeah.
You know? So we were doing that, and I was, like, getting so many phone calls. I was like, you know what? I'm going to change my phone number, and I'm going to start podcasting. I had heard Rob Wolf's podcast, and I was like, and I liked it. I really enjoyed listening to his stuff, and then...
You're going to change your phone number? What do you mean?
People were calling me.
People were literally calling you for advice.
Yeah. Yes.
Really? So your gym members had, like, your personal phone number?
Not my gym members. These were other gyms.
Oh, really?
I had other coaches calling.
So other gyms were calling you up for advice, and you thought you'd start a podcast to start giving them that advice.
Yeah. It's like, I'll just blast out of a megaphone instead of, like, one-on-one calls.
Yeah. Make it scalable.
So we were like, so we just started a podcast, and it really sucked in the beginning. Like, I was really bad at it. And then...
Was that what it was called? Barbell Shrugged?
Barbell Shrugged from the very beginning. Yeah. I mean, me and my buddy, Chris, we screwed around with it. We called it Chit Chat with Mike for a while. But that
like
we never
that.
Posted that. Yeah. So maybe I'll bring that one back one
That's
day.
A winner for new and noteworthy on iTunes.
That's right. That's right.
And by the way, for those of you who are wanting to get into podcasts, Mike, do you know the secret to getting on new and noteworthy in iTunes?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give it away.
Let's hear it.
I think most podcasters.
I know what it is.
Yeah,
it's called Start a Podcast. That is how you get on, and I'm not kidding.
But there's a strategy though, which is record five, and get people who have followings as your first five interviews or 10, and then release them all at once, and then notify those people, hey, and then they should post it too. So what that's going to do is just get you a lot of downloads at once, which is going to like. iTunes, the way the algorithm works is it you're preferred if you're new, and if you get a lot of downloads, then you'll shoot to the top for a short period of time, at least. So, but yeah, you just start doing it. I don't know how many people are like, you're right though, Ben. They're waiting for the perfect situation. They're waiting till they can afford the equipment or this or that. And I was like, I mean, I was lucky enough. I was doing well in business, so I was like, I'm gonna spend $1,000 on this equipment. So I went out, I went to Guitar Center, and I was like, what will $1,000 get me? And now my setup's a little more expensive, and because I'm a huge believer in really high audio quality, because if you have shitty audio quality, no one's going to listen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, don't worry. We'll give you the voice of God on this podcast.
Yes, absolutely. You got the filter on,
no,
right?
No, dude, I mean, like, I remember my first podcast 9 years ago. I sat down in front of my... I don't even think it was a Mac at that point.
Like,
I think
were you
it
like
was a,
recording on tapes and mailing
oh, I was
them
in
to
my
people?
I was in my personal training gym, and I was using the webcam on my computer, and I started a video podcast. I was one of the first podcasts in iTunes.
Nice.
I was doing video.
Holy shit! I didn't know you were around that long.
I did two podcasts, and it was me with the Journal of Strength Conditioning Research, and I had the journal open with all my highlighted sections. I was just going through, geeking out on the journal, like the latest research.
That's a good idea.
And it was me, and I had my shirt on with my logo and my hair done and everything. I did two podcasts, and then I realized...
Was this back in the bodybuilder days?
This was actually a little bit after the bodybuilding. I was a bodybuilder like 11 years ago. This was a little bit after that.
It was the triathlon
but
days.
But this was starting into the triathlon days. This was Skinny Ben. And I got two video podcasts in and realized that if you do audio, you don't have to take a shower. You can be naked like you and I are right now.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Buck naked.
Yeah, we are buck naked right now for those of you who want the visual. And you can just talk. Yeah. And so I converted into audio, but... Yeah, I mean, like, back in the day, the wild, wild west of podcasting, mm-hmm. there were no health and fitness podcasts, at least not as many as there are now.
Yeah. Well, so what opened my eyes, though, is Rob Wolf was doing it. I was like, man, this guy.
Yeah, Rob
Wolf's
one of the first guys.
Like, I don't want to do just pure content. And then I heard Joe Rogan, I go, mm-hmm. Oh, you can do whatever you want. And
you
that's when I was
talk.
Like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah. So you start up this podcast, Barbell Shrugged, and from there, you've been basically just podcasting for the past few years, or?
Yeah, doing podcasts. We created some, you know, we have a good following, and we have training programs online. That's how we funded a lot of the things we do. We travel the world visiting, like, some of the best coaches. And I've been really fortunate that because we always do our shows in person, I get in real deep. You know, for every hour you see me podcasting with somebody, that's probably a day or three that I spent with them and eating meals and, like, talking philosophy of training. Like, the show... like just taught me more about training and life than anything I've ever experienced before.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, my apologies that I haven't taken you out for a meal prior to our podcast. Seriously. I'll have to make that up to you.
My favorite story about Ben, I like to tell people, I want to tell this right now, even though we haven't, like, you haven't taken me out for a drink or anything like that. The, I was up in Vermont for something Joe DeSena was putting on.
Yeah.
And we were both there, and Joe had brought in like all these authors and speakers and all this stuff. And I came in late because I'm cool like that. And then the next morning, we all woke up early to go hike around the mountain. And I'm talking, we had already hiked to the top, my wife and
Was this out of Joe's farm in Vermont, where he does his death race and everything?
Yes. So I'm like walking through. So I start like going on discovery. So I'm like walking, I'm going off the trail. And then all of a sudden I hear like a grunting and like just leaves shuffling around. I'm like, dude, I think there's a bear out there. And then I'm like, all right, be careful, Ashley. And I come up, and it's Ben with his shirt off, and I think you had headphones in. And I was like, what the f***? I was like, what are you, and you had this giant stone in your arms. I was like, what are you building? You look up at me, and you go, I'm building my body. And then you look away and just keep walking. I was like, that's probably the funniest thing.
I remember that, carrying the rock up the mountain at Joe's farm. Yeah, that was back after World Championships a couple of years ago. Yeah. Yeah, and the crazy thing about his farm was that was right after the death race, and my keenest memory of that particular foray into Joe's farm was that my kids went out and played in the woods, and they came back in, and their feet were covered in human feces, because when people are doing Joe's death race, they're just like taking a dump out in the woods. When they gotta go, they gotta go. So be careful of human poo out at Joe's farm.
I'm now gonna look out for that. I've been out there a few times,
and I
was not looking for that. Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be focused.
Yeah, you don't need to take your probiotics out there. You get them for free. Let's go back to you sitting in the corner of the porch that we're standing on when I first saw you / met you. We actually recorded a podcast together. I was on your podcast, Barbell Shrugged. Best episode you have ever had.
I think
I'm
it was
sure.
the best episode
or
ever.
Or the least number of downloads, one of the two.
I'll tell you this, my audience doesn't like endurance or they just like CrossFit and weightlifting.
Yeah.
But...
Well,
I like to expose them to things that are a little bit outside of that. It doesn't always get the most following, and I think it should. That's part of my job is exposing people to things that they aren't looking for.
Yeah. The one thing that I think that CrossFitters should do, because I know now we're going to get a ton of CrossFitters listening in since the Mike Bledsoe is on.
Yeah, probably.
Is every once in a while they need to put on a heavy backpack and go out for like 7 or 8 hours in the woods.
No doubt.
Just do the stamina component.
Or 7 or 8 days.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the one missing component, right? You want to make sure if you get dropped in the middle of nowhere with 100 miles all around you, you can make it out alive.
I
think that's where the endurance athlete might be able to win, depending on who can kill the bear with the bare hands.
Yeah, there's the whole Neanderthal
aspect. The Neanderthal component feeds in. You were sitting in that corner right over there behind us. You had your eyes closed. You had a headset on. You were doing headspace, meditation, etc. When did you start to delve into what some people would consider the woo-woo, the mental game, the mindset game?
Yeah. It's funny is I think I was like getting into it when I was in high school, but I didn't even – there was no teachers available to me. The internet wasn't like – out there teaching people meditation, and I had some interest then. When I went in the Navy, I kind of like dropped all of it. I was like, that's just silly stuff I was like thinking about when I was a kid. But what really happened is about 3 years ago, where I really started deciding to dial in the inner game. And so like, I had pretty much, I wouldn't say I mastered the outer game, but I had put my entire life's effort into building my body, and in different ways, very exterior facing. And then I started playing around with meditation because I was stressed out. You know, I'm running multiple businesses. I'm having to do shows. Because doing a show is not easy. Like when you're interviewing.
What do you mean doing a show?
Doing
a podcast.
Yeah, when you're interviewing people, it can be very stressful. I mean, you got to like be on top of your game. You got to figure out what the audience needs to hear, and you got to stay engaged with the person you're talking with. And there's a variety of things going on. There's a lot of distractions. You might have, you know, I was up late that night, up early the next morning going on, you know, I was experiencing sleep deprivation. So I was doing things like meditation to try to focus my mind. And it was all about performing at a higher level. And I had watched a TED Talk where the guy who started Headspace gave this TED Talk. And the way he described meditation was just like, oh, shit, this actually makes sense now. This is something that I need to invest some time in, and they developed the Headspace app. And so that was like my first dive into that. Now, I'm going to...
Guided 10-minute meditations. That's the Headspace app, right?
Mm-hmm. It starts off with 10, and then 15, and then 20.
Also, it fools you into...
Yeah, like it's a training
longer
program.
Longer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, after you do the 10-minute meditations, then you're going to pay.
Right.
You know, $80 a year or something like that. So many pounds. I think it's like 60 pounds because it's English.
Right.
But so I was getting into that. But what really triggered that is I was interested in that for productivity, but I had listened to Joe Rogan's podcast. I'm just going to tell a little bit of a story here. It's a little bit personal, and I think some people might go, holy shit.
That's okay. We're naked. You can get personal.
Yeah. So I was listening to Tim Ferriss on Joe Rogan's podcast, and Tim Ferriss is a guy I respect, and his 4-hour work week is, like, really changed my life in a lot of positive ways as an entrepreneur. Like, it really caused me to think about how to approach business differently. And so when Tim Ferriss speaks, I listen. And they started talking about magic mushrooms. And Tim Ferriss goes, oh, yeah, like every 6 months I eat like a half-gallon bag of mushrooms to kind of hit the reset button.
That's a lot more than the standardized 3-gram dose of,
no doubt,
of psilocybin.
Yeah, I mean, and Joe was surprised by that. And yeah. Who knows what really the dosage he's talking about.
Right.
And I was like, and up to that point, I was like, I thought all that stuff was dumb. Like,
yeah.
I'd been in the military. Like, I had that mentality.
Or
like,
dangerous or unhealthy.
Exactly.
Because that was my impression of it, was it's just going to destroy your liver, so you don't go near it. Just
exactly.
Like alcohol.
Exactly. And so he says that, and so it came up on my radar. And I was like, what is going on? Months later, I go to a conference. It's a marketing conference, 7 days long, super intense. And there's this psychedelic art that is around this conference. And we were doing these exercises on empathy at the conference, because if you're studying marketing at all.
What conference was this?
Accelerate by Evan Pagan.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sitting there and I'm going, and we're doing these empathy exercises, because if you have a lot of empathy, then you can connect with your audience better, right?
Right.
And I could not do the empathy exercises. Like, we're teaming up with people. I've got this worksheet and I'm looking at somebody and I'm like struggling. I've never been so frustrated in my life. The whole week goes by, and I learned a lot, and I just feel like I had to digest it. And for some reason, I had like this intuitive understanding. I was like, I think that if I eat mushrooms, that it'll help me digest this information and figure out what's really important and what's not.
Nobody told you that? You just thought of it?
I think it was like I had heard people talking about things, but I was like, I just had like this. It was like it just hit me on Saturday night. I'm walking down the street to go get dinner. And I'm like, I'm supposed to eat mushrooms. Like I don't know exactly why, I couldn't place it. So I got some. I went to the park and I ate a bunch. And I didn't even know what like a proper dosage was or anything like
that. When you
say
you got some, what'd you do? Just like wander into a mushroom shop off the street, or like where?
Well,
when you get mushrooms.
So one of my friends,
right?
I was aware that he had some.
Right.
And he had talked about the benefits of it before.
I only asked because, like, my experience with a lot of these mind-altering plant medicines is the source can tend to be a little bit important.
Yes. My source was extremely reliable.
Right.
I guess
if you're listening in, don't Google online pharmacy mushrooms. Go for a reliable source.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, go to another country.
Right.
Go to Amsterdam.
Thailand.
Go somewhere where it's legal, because if you don't know somebody you trust that's actually doing the work, then it's not worth the risk. So I eat them, and then I realize I'm looking with the sky, and it completely goes fractal. And I'm in this park, and then the entire world falls into my head. And I realize that everything that I experience is inside, like everything I see is being computed in my brain. Like, everything is just like, this is all kind of like my creation in a way, and where I'm sitting right now is completely in my control. Everything, my entire life up to this point, is my own doing. If it's something that I don't like that's happened to me, it didn't happen to me, I did it myself. The good things that happen, I made those things happen. It is everything that is going on around me, I have some control over what's going on. And it's, things don't happen to me. I happen to things. And so there was like a level of understanding of like, oh, like if things are jacked up in my business, if my relationship with my wife isn't where I want it to be, it is 100% my responsibility.
Yeah.
It's my actions and behaviors up to this point that caused that. And
whereas up to that point, what were you following? Fate?
I was, nothing. I was like, yeah. I would be like, if a relationship wasn't going right with the business, I was blaming other people. I'd be like,
right,
it's the gym down the street. It's right. their fault why I don't have as many members, or you know, my wife just doesn't understand me. It's like all this stuff, you know. It's
yeah.
like I was frustrated with the world. I thought other people were dumb, and you know, I'm like, why can't they see it like I see it? Like, and so I had that, and then I had that was a beautiful realization, and I just cried, and then I'm in a dog park actually, and these people are getting off work at 5 o'clock, and they're bringing.
This is where you were at when you were doing the mushrooms in a dog park.
Yeah, I'm a genius.
It's an interesting place to choose. Yeah.
yeah. I wouldn't do that. I mean, yeah, first time, don't do that. So yeah. like these people come in, and they're bringing their dogs in, and they're playing with their dogs, but they're on their phones at the same time.
Right.
And I can tell the dog's frustrated, and I can imagine I'm going, oh, this dog's been cooped up in the house for like 10 hours. This person's been at work. They're throwing a tennis ball or a stick, and they're on their phone, and the dog is frustrated that they're not getting their undivided attention. And I'm sitting on top of this hill watching all this go down, and I'm getting pissed. I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe you're not giving your dog your full attention. It's been sitting at home. It's frustrated. Can't you tell? And then I go, oh, shit, I do that to my dog. Oh, I do that to my wife. I do that to my mom. I do that to my business partners, my clients. And I decided in that moment, I was like, I'm going to start giving people my full attention.
Yeah.
And I realized I'd never given anyone my full attention. I was always waiting to say the next thing, or I didn't
right.
shut my mouth long enough
right.
to hear what people were saying. And so I go home and I sit down with my wife, and I listen to her for the first time ever. It might have been the first time anyone ever listened to her. And I just ask her questions. I want to know more about, we'd been married for like 3 years. And I'm like asking her questions.
Were you still tripping on mushrooms at that point,
no,
or was this like later on?
This was later on.
Uh-huh.
And I started asking her questions that I was afraid to ask her up to that point.
Interesting.
And so I started asking her questions, and it was like the first time she felt like I really was interested in getting to know her.
Yeah.
Even though we'd already been married 3 years.
Yeah.
And up to this point, we were actually considering divorce.
Wow.
Like that was a discussion.
Wow.
And I went home and I started asking her questions and learning about her. And just asking and not responding with anything other than another question. And she looked at me and was like, what is going on? Are you... I mean, she knew what I had done that day, but she was like, this is really weird. And I was concerned at that point. I was like, I don't know if this is going to stick. Like, I hope this is permanent. So I'm like, but, you know, whatever. So I wake up the next day, still there. The next day, still there. The next day, still there. So... I was starting to get a handle on this empathy thing. And so...
And is that common? Like, have you looked into this since then? Like the biochemistry of psilocybin or mushrooms, and if they can actually permanently affect neuronal wiring in the brain or something like that?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Really?
Yeah. So psilocybin allows those connections, the neurons, to disconnect and reconnect more rapidly.
Really?
Yeah. And so it changes...
So it can literally rewire neurons.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting.
And psilocybin is not the only thing like that. So since then, I've gone to places like Peru and done ayahuasca, which does the same thing. Now, because you're rewiring the brain, you have to be very careful, because you can set yourself up for success or you can set yourself up for failure.
What do you mean?
So I had set myself up for success because I had been at a conference all week talking about empathy, talking about relationships, because business is nothing but relationships. So I was set up for success. Now, if you go into it thinking, I'm just going to have a good time, and you had had a bunch of discussions before that were negative in nature, or you're listening to death metal before you go in, where the lyrics are basically sending a negative message about hate or whatever, then you're kind of setting yourself up for failure. So if you want to rewire your brain in a certain direction, you go in with an intent. You go in with an intention of saying, hey, this is what I want to get out of this journey. And if you go in with a pure intent, you'll get it on the other end. But you have to be in the right environment. I highly suggest, and so now, after having that experience, I travel outside the country to do this, because in the United States, it's like, you know, a lot of these things are Schedule One, and
you
not,
travel outside of the United States for psilocybin, for ayahuasca, for just
all
everything?
All of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't like to screw around with it in the United States, just because... there's risk associated with this.
Do you have specific places that you go that you research? I mean, let's say somebody's listening in. They have
mm-hmm.
no clue where to start, but they are interested in that type of setting a good intention, neuronal rewiring, trying some of this stuff. what would be your recommendation?
I think that you got to do a lot of research. And I went to Peru for ayahuasca. There are quite a few ayahuasqueros down there. And there's just shamans. And some are better than others, just like anything. You know, there's some chiropractors that are good, some that aren't so good, you know, and trainers that are good and not so good. Same thing happens with shamans. It's the... And so you can find guys in Amsterdam and go to Amsterdam and do the magic
truffles. There's no,
like,
online Yelp shaman directory for good shamans.
No, maybe we should start one. You know, maybe there is one. I just haven't known it. But what I found is if I just kind of put it out into the universe, if I go, look, this is what I'm looking for, and I have enough conversations with people, someone will go, oh, I know a guy. And next thing you know.
That's what's happened to me. Like I did a podcast a few weeks ago on my first psilocybin experience, and it was literally with one of my good friends, James Rodina, who was on the podcast, and he had a very, very good, reputable source of psilocybin down in Kauai, and we set extremely good intentions, and it was one of the most life-changing decisions I've made for my business in the past 5 years as far as realization.
I would not be standing here right now without it.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with, have you ever microdosed with LSD?
Yeah.
I tried that as like a neuro hack. I had my first experience with that, and I'm working on a podcast about it last week. Same thing, set intentions and took it, got it from a good source.
Yep.
And, you know, it's one of those things where you either have to know somebody or set that intention and then just begin to talk to people.
Do it with somebody who has a lot of experience and who has had a lot of good experiences.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people who, this is the situation you should avoid for your first time, or, you know, is like, don't go to a concert and decide you're going to eat a bunch or a little or whatever. Like, your first, sit with somebody who has used these for personal development specifically. And if you start talking to people, you might be surprised at who is doing these things. If you just kind of put it out there.
Do you find that this, starting down the road of plant medicine, and perhaps what many people in the physical exercise culture would consider to be taboo or not interesting, has brought you out of the world of CrossFit and fitness? I mean, where are you at in terms of, like, your fitness protocol and your gym and all those type of things right now?
I will tell you this. The All right, for the gym and for coaching, it's helped me care about other people more, which has made me 10 times the coach I used to be.
And you're still running a gym?
I own a gym. I don't run it daily, no. But I have 20 people on my team who I'm coaching.
Right.
I coach gym owners. So I have a barbell business, which is basically a business set up for CrossFit gym owners.
Okay.
So I'm coaching people on business.
You went from owning a gym to starting the Barbell Shrug podcast to now running Barbell Business.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And so... It allows me to come from a place of service and wanting to help people more. Through these experiences, I care less about my own personal gain. And what I find is when I serve people more, more goodness comes into my life in ways that I could have never imagined it. Like, my life is a dream. And the more that I am looking out for others, the more really good stuff just happens to fall in my lap. I can't complain. In regard to my training, one of the things that really took a major shift is I did stop competing.
Stopped competing in CrossFit?
Yeah, and weightlifting too, like, because it wasn't serving my purpose anymore. And those experiences with the plant medicines really did allow me to access my purpose and service. And I found that by competing, I found that I could be doing other things that would be more beneficial. And I also started considering the long term more. So I started taking care of my body. So I went from, like, having a mentality of when I went into a training session is I'm not good enough. Like, I'm not big enough. I'm not at the right weight. My shoulders are jacked up. My hips aren't where they're supposed to be. It's not good enough. I gotta, like, beat my body into submission. I'm going to beat my body into submission because I don't like my body. And it's not good enough. It's not what I want it to be.
Right.
And I was comparing myself to other people. And then after I kind of went through this transformation where the plant medicines really helped facilitate, I now approach all my training from, I love my body. I'm super grateful that this is the one I have. You know, there are things about my body, like my feet are flat, my right foot, you know, my right leg lacks good internal rotation. So I end up with back problems. My shoulders, I have to work on them every day. To keep them from being internally rotated. But my approach is different. I now find it much easier.
Your beard, also, by the way, I was going to tell you, it's a little bit more trimmed on the right side than the.
Oh, shit. Dude, now I'm all now I'm
you
all self-conscious.
You can take a break if you need to go fix it.
Yeah, but I used to people used to be able to f with me and go, dude, your right quad looks bigger than your left quad, and I'd be in
right.
the mirror like, what's going on? And so like now, it's all about being healthy. It's all about like I can perform at a higher level than I used to be, because my approach to training now is different. I don't I do things that are healthy for my joints, not because I'm just trying to get stronger no matter what. I'm capable of taking a longer term approach. I can go, oh, I want to still be healthy in a year. It's not about this 12-week cycle. It's about, where do I want to be in a year, 3 years, 5 years? When I'm 70, I want to be moving really well. And that means that I have to like really love what I'm doing with myself, even though it's not fun. Like working on my diaphragmatic breathing and like every morning is not, it used to not be, I wasn't interested in it because I couldn't see how it help me in everything, every aspect of my life. And in that respect, like, so all my training is like, I'm loving it. I'm feeling it. I'm not thinking about what I have to do before or after my training session. I'm not doing a training session because I feel like I should do it or I have to do it. There's no obligation. Mm. When I'm moving because I love to move, and I'm putting all my focus into my movement practice. And it's all about increasing the quality of my movement versus how much weight am I lifting, how fast am I going. It's about, there's so much more focus on the quality of my movement, because I know that if I'm operating at the highest quality, then the results will come. I trust that.
Yeah, you're looking at the world through the lens of not just performance but also health and longevity. It's interesting because one of the things that's happened to me, and I don't know if it's because I have begun making more forays into plant-based medicine and opening myself up to that. I don't know if it's because my spiritual life has gotten stronger. It's probably a combination of a lot of those, but one of the things that I used to be obsessed with was performance, and was that narcissism, and was seeing myself running, you know, or a photograph of me doing a Spartan race and not liking the way my foot turned out.
Yep.
And one of the, you know, I mentioned I had, for example, a realization with psilocybin, for example. My purpose in life is not to go out and kick and take names on a race course. My purpose in life is to actually inspire other people to go out and climb their own personal Mount Everest. Yep. And that's been a huge, huge realization for me. It's not even about my own personal health and longevity.
It's probably changed
it's
how you podcast, changed how you do social media.
It's changed a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like my posts now, none of my posts are for, like, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, like, I want to inspire
you to live
your life better.
I do still Snapchat Jim selfies. You got to Snapchat Jim selfies. If you want to be
that's
successful on Snapchat. Yeah. You talked about diaphragmatic breath work, and you told me yesterday when we were at this little health entrepreneurial gathering that we were at, that was one thing that you were getting into now is breath work. I've talked to Brian McKenzie on the show. He's talked a little bit about the use of the training mask and diaphragmatic breath work.
Yeah.
What is it that you're doing when it comes to breath work that you think is something people should know about?
Yeah, I do a variety of things, and I'm always tweaking. So I'll do something for like a month, and then I'll layer another 10% on top. So I'm talking to guys like Brian McKenzie as well, and trying to pick their brain on what they think is working right now. Actually, the thing that I find works, the thing that's made the biggest impact on me is, are you familiar with Jill Miller? Yoga tune-up?
Is she like the yoga, yoga tune-up balls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has this gorgeous ball, is what it's called. It's a big...
Is it called a gorgeous ball?
Gorgeous.
Oh, gorgeous.
Core. It's for your core.
Gorgeous, got it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I think we
should invent a gorgeous ball too, though.
Definitely. But it's a big, soft ball. And when you look at it, you're like, I'm supposed to roll on this?
Mm-hmm.
And so using that and breathing into it has been...
You lay on top of it
and on your front and back, and you learn to breathe into the ball. So it's like you're trying... So I might be laying on it over my belly button or something like that, and I lay on it and I relax and I breathe into the ball like I'm trying to feel the ball. And it's teaching you some proprioception that is kind of tough to do otherwise. And you can do it on your own. You don't have to have someone pushing on you. So if you go get therapy a lot of times around your breathing, someone will have to push on your belly and they're like, hey, breathe into my hand. But what I love about the ball is I can do it every morning and I can breathe into it and I can actually feel it expanding because I'm crushing this ball. And when I breathe into it, it does expand. And so You know, I use that ball to really warm up my torso every day, because if I start my day off with really good breathing patterns, then I have more energy all day. Like, I'm not wasting energy breathing into my upper chest.
Can people find this protocol online?
I'm not sure. Buy her book, you go to Amazon.com, Yoga Tune Up by Jill Miller. Can buy like the book and the ball set and all that kind of stuff. I wish I had an affiliate.
If you guys go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/MikeBledsoe, that's MikeBledsoe. I'll put some links to Mike's website and some of the stuff that we're talking about in the show notes. But this breathwork, does this also help with like a morning bowel movement, things like that? I mean, are you doing it for that purpose?
Yeah, I do it before.
Like for enhancing digestion?
I do find that does help with that. I do it before I eat. I get things moving around. I find that, you know, I do go take a shit afterwards.
Yeah, you're going to laugh. You've seen these new, like, they're basically glorified car buffers that people are selling now for self-massage.
Yeah.
So I've gotten a few of those mailed to me, everything from, like, the Hyper Ice foam roller to the vibration ball to car buffer. I've actually tried the, you know how your colon travels from the right side of your rib cage to the left side, down the left side, over across to the right side, and then down, and that's where it empties. I've started experimenting with these car buffers in the morning, just for like 2 minutes. When I wake up in the morning, right? You take the car buffer, cross left side, down, cross to the right side, and down. And dude, I mean, you go take a giant, glorious, baby-like dump.
I have a feeling you and I are going to be, we're going to be like 100 years old. Because we're taking care of our bodies every morning like this.
115.
You know what? By that time, biotech's going to get to a point where, you know, we'll just, basically, they're going to inject little nanotechnology, and then our brains will attach to the neurons, and then we'll have access to all information all the time, and we'll be operating from pure consciousness.
So, just making that up, or no? You really truly think that?
Yeah, I really think. I think if we can live long enough for that technology to come online, it's going to be an interesting time.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. A couple other questions I want to ask you.
People just went, Mike's crazy.
Any listeners who are left. some of the things that I've seen people tap into when they get into plant-based medicine, when they get into that deeper connection with nature, things like wild plant foraging, hunting, sit spots in nature, that, you know, things like that. Have you gotten into any of those type of things?
I have not. I wouldn't say I feel guilty, but I feel drawn to more hunting and gardening both. I do recognize that I feel very disconnected from my sources of food, and I live on the road most of the time, so there are some challenges there. But there's, you know, I could make up excuses, what I really need to do is, I really think that we are missing that connection with nature, and that is, I think that's part of a spiritual journey.
Yeah,
and I think
that's actually one of the problems with the conference that you and I are at right now, PaleoFX.
Yeah,
is if you look at the actual schedule of talks, there's not much talk about growing your own food and about hunting and about wild plant foraging. I think that's a little bit of a disconnect.
We'll talk to them about it. Maybe you know what?
Yeah. Yeah, don't get me wrong, I love this conference.
This is my favorite conference every year, actually. I'm going to go fishing up in Oregon this fall, some salmon fishing. My business partner, his dad, is just an expert up there for that. I want to start getting into spearfishing. I've been starting to research that. I live down in San Diego where you can just take a kayak out, anchor out. Have you done that before?
Just put the finishing touches on my Koa roller with the reel so I can step up the weight of the fish that I'm going after.
Nice.
I did a week-long freediving course to get my breath hold time up to 5 minutes so that I can go deep enough to get breath hold time to 5 minutes and depth to 80 feet, which is what you need to get decent fish.
Wow. Are you doing the Wim Hof at all?
Yeah. Okay. Wim's been on the show a few times, and you don't want to use Wim Hof breath for freediving.
No, that's a different thing.
Yeah, you breathe off a bunch of CO2.
I find the Wim Hof stuff can help me get more comfortable. Like, I do Wim Hof, so I do the Gorgeous Ball, and then I do Wim Hof after that.
Okay.
And then, so I get the breathing patterns going with the ball, and then And then while I'm doing my power breaths with the Wim Hof, I actually am focusing on breathing properly when I'm doing those power breaths. But I could see where the Wim Hof stuff, I was down in Cabo last week and doing some snorkeling. And I actually, and that was the first time I'd gone snorkeling since I adopted the Wim Hof breathing method. And I noticed that I was just more comfortable holding my breath longer.
Yeah.
It's just just the mental thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I do the same thing. I do cold pool swimming in the morning and use some of the Wim Hof stuff. But hit me up after we finish and we'll talk. I got a lot of spearfishing and freediving resources for you.
Yes,
I want to ask you one other thing that's kind of related to that morning routine, and that is sleep. Are you doing anything to kind of wind you down? I mean, you're a driven, high-achieving guy.
Yeah.
A lot of folks I talk to in this industry who are wired that way,
mm-hmm.
they do have their own special protocols to help them wind down at night.
So yeah.
How do you get to sleep at night?
All right, so...
Stay asleep.
Staying asleep is the hard part. I don't do the electronics for 90 minutes before I go to sleep. In fact, I have a lot of windows in my house. I don't have to turn my lights on during the day. And when the sun starts going down, my body starts winding down.
No electronics at all.
So
no Facebook, nothing.
So what?
No Facebook.
I mean, unless, I mean, it's got to be an emergency.
What
for
do
me
you
to
do for those 90 minutes?
Oh, I'm reading. You know, like, you know, I just put on a dim light and I read.
What do you read?
So usually in the evening I read some spiritual text or I read sci-fi novels.
Right.
So
right.
I read things that help me relax or get me out of thinking about the business.
Mm-hmm.
I meditate in the mornings. And then in the evenings, if I'm having a hard time, if I feel like I'm getting stuck in my thoughts, then I do some meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep a little bit of cannabis on hand too. So I have a little vape pen that's mostly indica. Mm-hmm. And I actually have this really great.
Yeah, indica works really well for sleep.
So what I do, we actually have, it's a 2-to-1 ratio of CBD to indica. So we
mm-hmm.
we now have the technology to vape CBD, which is fantastic. You can take it orally. I know you have a.
I do.
Yeah, you have a CBD. Yeah.
No, I'll send you some. You can try it. Compare it to the vape, because I've actually vaped indica and CBD and taken the nano CBD that I make now.
Nice.
And I think the nano CBD kicks
okay.
the damn. But
yeah.
I'm obviously jaded too, because I sell it.
What I really like about it is it's easy to travel with.
Yeah.
So, it's a 2-to-1 ratio of CBD to indica. So it's just highly relaxing. The CBD helps you relax anyway.
Yep.
And then you have that indica, which helps your it's a deeper relaxation with the indica. And so I do that most days. I mean, I think CBD is just, it's so good for you and, you know, the anti-inflammatory properties and everything. So it's like, it's dumb not to take. Like CBD is just dumb not to do.
The endocannabinoid system is totally underplayed right now as far as the amount to which people tap into it.
Yeah.
And it's literally just as important as your endocrine system or your cardiovascular system.
One of my favorite things about the CBD is that it's sustainable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like fish oil, like I'm a huge fan of fish oil. I take it, but like, it's not necessarily sustainable. There's like overfishing is an issue.
Yeah.
CBD, man, we can just grow more of that.
Yep, exactly.
No doubt.
Not in the U.S., strangely enough. Just dumb.
You don't
see a lot of like industrial hemp growing.
Yeah,
in the
I think
US,
a lot of it comes from Latvia.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you guys want to try out Mike Bledsoe's routine, basically in the morning, he's using that ball all across his, you're basically laying on it, stomach, mm-hmm. digestive mm-hmm. organs, all that jazz. You follow that up with Wim Hof breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the evening, 90 minutes before bed, no screens, use a little bit of indica, CBD.
Yep.
Boom, lights out.
Yeah. And after the Wim Hof breathing in the morning, I do about a 30-minute sitting Zen meditation, that style.
Nice.
So
nice.
After you've had, if you've played around with plant medicines at all, and well, in my experience, after having played around with some plant medicines, my meditation is, I've been able to get more deep with it, and it becomes more meaningful. And in my experience, especially with mushrooms, it's kind of shown me where I'm supposed to be going when I meditate, which is nice.
Yeah. See, he's not just a tattooed, bearded CrossFitter. He's a deep man. I'm going to link to Mike's website and also some of the materials he has out there, everything from Barbell Shrug to Barbell Business. Just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/Mike Bledsoe, and you'll be able to dig into all the goodness that is Mike and get to know this guy a bit better. He actually gave a really good talk at the entrepreneurial conference I was at that happened the day before Paleo FX. And it's really good. For those of you out there who are business owners, gym owners, definitely look Mike up in terms of the advice that he's dishing out on that front, too. Mike, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me on, Ben.
All right, folks. This is Ben Greenfield and Mike Bledsoe. Should we go put our clothes back on now?
Yeah, they might want us to do that before we get on stage.
Let's go get dressed. And thanks for listening in, folks. Check out Mike, bengreenfieldfitness.com/Mike Bledsoe. And have a healthy week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.